Okay, Jason Edworthy, if you could come back up to the podium, and we would invite people from the audience to come up and address questions to Jason on the topic of today on wind energy and deregulation. If you could please come up to this microphone at the front, identify yourself, and then ask a question. Who's first?
Thank you for your presentation.
My question, I don't know if it's still on. My question, Mr. Edworthy, is could you... I thought I was. Okay. My question, Mr. Edworthy, is could you... Okay. My question, perhaps you could take the mystery out of wind power relative to being a supply in times when the wind isn't blowing. And of course, we know you were speaking about the need for more infrastructure, so more could be put on the grid. But how does one control the need for power, and how does that, is that supplemented by our other wind sources? Our little discussion at our table was talking about hydropower being more compatible with wind power and than gas generated. So could you just expand our knowledge on that, please? Thank you.
Thank you. That's an excellent question. And you're right, hydropower is an excellent way to work with wind. One of the benefits of a province, say, like Manitoba or Quebec, where there's an awful lot of hydro, is that when the wind is blowing, you can keep some water back behind the dam, effectively storing the wind energy. But one of the things we're always very careful to do, and I hope all my colleagues do this too, is we never claim that wind is some sort of magic bullet. We do say that it could easily make up 20 to 30% of the supply, but that implies that you have a portfolio of different energy sources, and they all work in different ways and in unison, and so that you always have enough of either hydro or gas or coal or other types of generation to always fill in the gaps. Now, when we've only got a little bit of wind power like we do right now in Alberta, and it's all in one place, it tends to either be on or off. But one of the things that we're very anxious as an industry to see happen, and working with the transmission administrator, we see this is going to be helped a lot by new transmission systems, is to have a geographic diversity of wind across the province. Because, you know, if you have enough wind turbines in enough places, frankly, the wind is almost always blowing somewhere. And so that balances that out. So that's the other part of that solution. And in fact, studies done with the Alberta Electric System Operator now show that with greater geographic diversity, the variability of wind on the system drops dramatically. And coupled with the forecasting that we're starting to do this year, we expect to see that managing that, you know, what do you do when there's no wind, will become a question of the past. I hope that helps.
Jason, my name is Sylvia Campbell. I'm going to raise what may be a political question. There has been a lot of flack for over the proposed transmission line between both Edmonton and Calgary, I understand, and another one that was going to go from Lethbridge down into Montana. And the question I'm going to ask is the transmission capacity. Would this be capacity within the province to serve people in the province or for export to the United States? And I think that some of us really worry that that's what the plan is.
Thanks, Sylvia. Now, I'm not a transmission expert. I'm a wind guy. But my understanding is that the north-south transmission system is a very important backbone that we need to reinforce in the province between the two major load centers, and it's also the pathway between southern Alberta and most of the thermal generation in the province, which tends to be up near Edmonton. And so the reliability of all the system is critical, as I understand it, to that upgrade. Will it facilitate more export? It might do a little bit, but what it'll mostly do is reduce our need for imports, or it might make the imports easier to bring in at critical times when other lines are full. And why is that important? Unlike most of the rest of North America, Alberta is not very well interconnected with its neighbors electrically. We have a very tiny DC connection to Saskatchewan, and we have this modest-sized connection to BC. And what happens in most of the rest of North America is that when you've got a shortage in your state or your province, you freely draw in from other provinces to help you, and that maintains the frequency and the quality of the electricity. We don't have very good connections to do that for us. So there is talk of increasing the intertie to BC, but that's a different project. The intertie to Montana, the Montana-Alberta tie line, is a private line, a private proposal, and I think the jury is out in many quarters about how much value that would bring Alberta. It might bring some additional generation. I don't think it would give us very much of a market because there's not that many people live in Montana. And the line doesn't go anywhere else. If it went off to Las Vegas or Wyoming and we could get to the California market, frankly, that would be very good for generators to access that market. Would that be, that would be private money investing in facilities then that would send product down south. But currently, the north-south line, as I understand it, is simply a critical part of infrastructure that we need to keep the lights on here.
Terry Shillington, thank you very much for your presentation, well-structured and organized and so on. Your remarks in your main speech implied that energy deregulation had been a boon to the wind industry. And I guess I'm from Missouri about this, and I think that a province that had a regulated industry might decide that we want to commit to, say, 25 or 30% wind energy and build it into the mix. And I wonder if that is, in fact, why Quebec is so far ahead of Alberta in its use of wind energy because, in fact, it's regulated. Do you want to comment?
Thanks, Terry. It's hard to remember back 10, 15 years ago when it was regulated here, but I can tell you that I was beating my head against the wall and unable to develop any wind farms or any wind energy because of the regulators at that time were clearly charged with only procuring the lowest cost sources of energy. And certainly in those days, wind energy was far from that. We may be quite competitive these days, but that's only because of the scale that we've got and a lot of technological change. So if we had been patient enough to wait and to work politically, we might have achieved that. But in this province, this is the way it worked. Because we've led such a good example, it has resulted in other provinces changing their policy to do exactly what you're speaking about. Those are typically provinces where they would never open up the market like Alberta anyway. However, if you look on a per capita basis and you compare the success that's coming to Ontario and Quebec in terms of megawatt numbers compared to Alberta, in fact, Alberta still leads in terms of megawatts per Albertans, per people. It's really a result of a larger population and larger load.
Thank you for your presentation, Mr. Edwin. I was interested in your wind power. Basically, your generating costs would be free because the wind is free, eh? Gas burners, biomass, and all that.
Great questions. I love the tough questions. There's a couple of different ways of answering this to get the right answer because it's several questions you ask. First of all, let's say that in Alberta, it's a spot market. It's called the power pool of Alberta, and it's settled hourly. So there's an hourly price, and people fill in perhaps every 5 minutes through that. You can watch this on the internet at the power pool of Alberta. We actually take the hourly price, whatever it is. says if it's $25 a megawatt, 2.5 cents, we took that. If it's 10 cents, we took that. We are price takers. We don't actually bid. So we are actually the lowest source from a market perspective because... However, what you're often used to seeing is you can buy wind power to provide, say, 25, 50, or 100% of your home by paying a surcharge on your bill. Now, I can tell you that, especially with gas prices a little higher than they are today, say the $8 to $10... I will try...
The federal government put a renewable energy incentive in for 2 cents a kilowatt subsidy for wind power, and I think they changed it to 1 cent. Are they still getting 1 cent subsidy?
It actually started at 1.2 cents, correct? The wind power production incentive. They dropped the 1 cent. The program has been fulfilled the first several years ago. And so projects that did receive that will receive it for 10 years. No new projects have received it in the last 2 or 3 years. Although both the previous federal governments announced that they want to continue the program, nothing has replaced it as of yet. So there's nothing in place at this time.
Are you making money on emission credit trading?
We do make a little bit of money on emission credit trading. What we actually call them are green tags. Mm-hmm. And what it is that's actually just a different way of buying green power. And what that does is it allows us to take the green part, if you will, as a piece of paper and trade it, as opposed to shipping both the electricity and the green the way we do within the province. And that's frankly allowed us to do some very innovative things. We actually sold green power to Edwards Air Force Base in California with this method, which is an absolutely remarkable new product. I'd be glad to chat offline with you about how we did that. Well, we make money for our shareholders like you.
Thank you, Mr. Edward. I'm Margaret Lewis. I have a couple of questions for you. The first deals with Montana-Alberta tie. This line, which is a private-for-profit line, has been proposed to run from Lethbridge to Great Falls, as you mentioned. Now, Montana-Alberta tie is attempting to convince the public that the line is needed because they are going to be carrying green power to the U.S. And they also mentioned that they will be bringing power into Alberta as needed. However, the Alberta Energy and Utilities Board is considering their application as a strictly for export line. In other words, they are not considering any import from Montana Alberta tie. And because there are no Southern Alberta wind projects going into that line, it is strictly taking power from our grid down to Great Falls. Where is the wind power that they claim to be carrying coming from?
The simple answer is that because I'm not associated with that company, and I'm also aware that there are no publicly announced wind companies that have asked for capacity, I don't know.
The second question I have is dealing with the 500 kV line from Edmonton to Calgary. Now, that has been proposed, and my question there is, what is the source of the energy that's going into that line? Our understanding is that it's coming from the Lake Wabamun area and from coal-burning plants rather than from green power. Will there be additional green power going into that line, and if so, where is it coming from?
I believe you've got it right. It's to reinforce the existing system and the existing generation sources in the province. I am told that it will facilitate adding more green power down the road once we get our own transmission built in this area, simply because the system will be able to handle more. But there's no specific projects that I'm aware of that are planning to take direct advantage of that, especially because it's a 500 kilovolt line. It's really meant to be a corridor, a large pipeline, as opposed to something that someone would hook up a project to. I hope that helps.
My name is Lawrence Hoy, and I compliment you on your presentation relative to wind power, and certainly I welcome the advent of wind power in southern Alberta. But I do recognize, as you've mentioned, that our transmission system is really in the hit right now. The thing that I don't quite understand is a lot of our politicians blither on about clean coal. Well, there's no such thing as clean coal. Get over that one. Maybe we can pump some of the CO2 underground, but I don't know whether it's going to stay down there or not. Do you have any indication at all, and does your company have the courage to think about positioning a nuclear power plant in southern Alberta?
Wow, that's one of the tougher questions I've had. I think I said earlier, I'm the wind guy.
That's a reasonable answer.
My understanding, and I believe I heard our CEO, Steve Snyder, say something to this effect at a shareholder meeting in the last year or two, that TransAlta has no plans to invest in nuclear technology in this province. That's my current understanding.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
My name is Patrick McDonald, and I think I got an easy question for you, a couple. The percentage of hours in southern Alberta where the wind blows capable of generating power, is it a percentage or is it an hourly basis? My second question relative to that is, at what point or what velocity of wind does your machines have to stop? And I'll leave that with you.
Those are also really great questions. So we talk about our machines operating with something called a capacity or a load factor. And it's a bit funny the way we do it, because it's different than how thermal generators would do it, but let me try to explain it. If it's a 1,000 kilowatt wind generator, and it can produce 1,000 kilowatts when the wind's high, and when the wind's not blowing, it produces zero, and in between, it produces somewhere along sort of a curve there. The number of hours at each wind speed result in how much electricity it generates. And so very typically, we generate on average through the year around 30 to 40% of that top output as if the wind blew hard all the time. Thank goodness we don't generate more than that or we'd all be blown away. However, when we look at individual machines, they tend to be online generating about 65% of the time. When you get a wind farm, you actually increase that because more machines are operating when others aren't. And so we increase that to about 75 or 80% of the time. And as we start looking at wind farms distributed across the province, right now with what we've got, it's about 80 to 85% of the time. And as we increase across the province, we anticipate that's going to go up to 95 or 97% of the time, which is why I like that question so much, is it helps reflect what I was talking about earlier, how wind is going to become more and more reliable and dependable in the province as we get more of it in there. Okay, that was the first part of the question. The second was, thank you. We cut in at 4.5 meters per second. What the heck's a meter per second? It's what we use in the industry, even in the States. It's about 14 kilometers an hour. We cut out at 25 meters per second. That's about 90 kilometers an hour. It's not quite as simple as that, because at 90 kilometers an hour, it has to be above that for 60 seconds, and then the software on board will shut that particular machine down, and it'll come back on at about 75 kilometers per hour. There's a bit of a zone in there that we don't like to come back on, because it's very high load. It'll actually also shut down faster than that if we get a gust that's up at 30 meters per second, so that's probably a more than 100 kilometers an hour for 10 seconds. We get a gust that lasts 10 seconds. So it can absorb a little bit of banging around by the wind, but not a whole bunch. We don't get that many high wind shutdowns, frankly. We have this year. It's been a very energetic year. when you see the headlines in the Pincher Creek Echo talking about roofs and buildings and trucks blowing away, and so we've had some turbine shutdown, but they're still all there. I really enjoyed speaking with you, and I'll be around for a few minutes if anybody wants to have any other offline conversations.
Well, I just have one last question, if I can remember what it was. Nope, I can't remember what it was. So does anyone else have another question that they'd like to come and ask?
We have 5 minutes left.
Yes.
My
Okay, the question is, how is it possible to keep birds and bats from being destroyed by the windmill? And I remember my question too now. So where are the windmills built, and is there any opportunity to do it right here in Canada?
I'll answer the last question first. We have tried very, very hard to develop a large enough market in Alberta and in Canada to attract manufacturers. And the fact is that it's a challenge. We're a small country, really. And we've only recently caught on to wind power, as you saw from the graphs that you couldn't quite see. And we're just now growing. Even in the U.S., because they've had kind of fits and starts of wind power, mostly driven, frankly, by a federal incentive, I think first put in by a Republican government. They have not attracted very much manufacturing either. And very interestingly enough, when asked this question at the National Wind Energy Conference in October, I said, the solution to this is to learn Mandarin. Because China is where all the manufacturing is going to be built. That's where we're going to be buying our machines, because we can get 60 hertz machines there, whereas the Europeans who build them now run on 50 hertz, and they have two production lines, and they don't want two production lines. So they're building in China. And so I think that's probably my next evening course. Back to birds and bats. One of the things we did for birds is the very first thing we did is back in 1988-89, we designed the first environmental assessment in, as far as I know, North America for wind turbines and wind farms. And we did it by going to the naturalists and the environmental groups in the Pincher Creek, Southwest Alberta area, and asking them how we should do this. And the great thing about that is that we got them engaged. We shoehorned in the standard oil and gas EA into this and made it work. And we still use basically that same method now, even though they're under Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency guidelines. But one of the things we did at that time is we hooked up with a biologist who we were very close to, and we actually gave him the mandate to tell us where we couldn't go. And so he went off and researched what were the problems or concerns that he foresaw. So, for example, water bodies. If you want to avoid waterfowls, stay away from water bodies. How far? It doesn't take very much, a couple hundred meters at the most, so that you don't have birds coming in at night, going out. Now you get a rainy year, you get water almost anywhere. We've since learned that waterfowl are extremely good at avoiding the turbines. They see them. You know, birds are not actually stupid. They see things really, really well. Raptors see things extremely well. They know what's going on. The odd bird doesn't pay attention, doesn't notice it, and they do get clobbered, unfortunately. We also stay away from habitats,